This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey everybody, I've got a little bit of housekeeping here before we get into the episode about Instagram and Theology Beer Camp. So I've been getting more active on Instagram, and I just want to let you guys know, in case you want to see me make some videos where I look directly into the camera, I'm sharing some stories and posts about basically all the topics that we cover on this show over at instagram.com/DanCoke. That's C-O-K-E, and the link is in the show notes. Also, Theology Beer Camp is returning in 2024, October 17th through 19th. The theme is Return of the God Pods. That is a Lord of the Rings reference, which should surprise nobody. I will be there alongside Brian McLaren, Diana Butler-Bass, The New Evangelicals, Bible for Normal People, Tony and Josh from GGCH, of course, Trip Fuller and Homebrewed Christianity, and a whole grip of others. And you can use the promo code RETURNOFYHP, all one word, for $25 off your ticket. Prices go up starting June 1st. That link will be in the notes. I hope to see a bunch of you guys there in October. It was a serious highlight of last year for me. Welcome, everybody, to You Have Permission, the show that aims to take both Christianity and the modern world of science and culture very seriously. My name's Dan Koch, and I'm a licensed therapist and a post-evangelical liberal Protestant trying to just ignore the haters and focus on the Creator. Am I right? Tony is off camera. Today, I am joined by editor and producer Josh Gilbert. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Dan.
And author and theologian Tony Jones. Hey, Tony.
What up?
This is another of our regular Generation Gap Culture Hour episodes, the first half of which will be on the main feed, and the second half of which will only be on the Patreon feed. So head over to patreon.com/DanCoke. That link is in the notes if you want to hear the whole thing. We've got a lot to get into and get through today. I feel like almost every day, every two, 3 days, I am texting you guys with some other thing that has come up, or you're texting the rest of us. But we got another round of Bar Bank Church or Dispensary. We've got ways we are becoming like our dads. I have a question about, quote, getting sober, unquote, in this modern era of legalized cannabis. Okay. There was the announcement of a new book by Richard B. Hayes where he reverses his longtime stance on queer sexuality from a New Testament ethical perspective. There was the Andrew Huberman takedown piece from a couple weeks ago. And if we have time for it, here are three more things we might get into today. How Daft Punk helped me understand contemporary worship music. An update on Monster Jam in 2024 from a recent experience from that my son and I went to. And a piece by Russell Moore in Christianity Today about character mattering, featuring an all-time great photo. Like sort of, what is that called? It's like a photo headline, thumbnail. What's that?
When you build a website, you pick like a social image.
Yeah.
It goes out when, yeah, it's like buried in the metadata, you know.
Yeah, journalists do this. There's like a piece of art, you know. Anyway, there's a great one that I won't spoil right now. And then there might be more that we talk about, but that's what's on the docket. We got a lot today.
Dan, you have to like wait to send us stuff until like the week before we tape, because like most of that stuff just goes, you know, oh, that was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's okay. I actually haven't even read that Russell Moore piece. I feel like I know what it's going
to
say.
You don't even need to read it, because it was just like my hot take on it. And I should tell, listeners might not know this, Dan, but Josh and I spend a lot of time together. And that's different from when we started. We went for like the first whole year of GGCH and we'd actually never met in person. And now we're together like almost daily.
We met on a GGCH, right? It was like, hi, Tony, we're going to do this.
Yes, exactly. And then we met in person for the first time, flying to your event, Dan, at the Minneapolis airport. And now we're together like daily, and we're often sending you selfies so you have some FOMO.
It's the single greatest source of FOMO in my life these days, for sure. No question. The best I can do is sort of scratch that by meeting with you guys virtually once a month or so, which is one reason why we keep this regular appointment. Okay, so let's start off with our traditional bar, bank, church, or dispensary. This is where we take turns picking a city in America and naming four businesses that could be one of those four, and the other two guess, and we keep track of the score going forward. So, Josh Gilbert, I believe you are up this month.
Yes, and I looked back. It looks like the first time we did this was in June. So we do this month, and then next month would be the last if we're doing the fiscal year.
Okay, great.
And the current rank is Dan has 9, Tony has 3, and I have 9. So this is your chance, Tony.
I think we need to have a season-ending tournament with double, triple points or something.
You need a year of jubilee is what you need, Tony.
Exactly,
you need the slate wiped clean because right now you're...
Yes. That's
well,
right.
The next month is you're up, Tony. So maybe if you stump us both, you get to do another bonus round where you can take it or something. We'll have to see.
Yeah, which sort of matches the way that in general society, like we take things a little easier on our elders. You know, the older among us, we sort of soften their landings and stuff. So we could apply the same here for Tony.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go. So I chose my hometown of Mankato, Minnesota. Tony might have an advantage here for being 90 minutes away from this spot, but here are the four names.
Okay.
Cornerstone, Third Street, Rise, and the old classic, Elevate.
Elevate making another. Oh, wow. Rise and Elevate being synonyms. That's like that's a cheat code right there. I'll allow it, but hey. I mean, because that's kind of the whole point of the joke, right? Okay.
Yes, so we have Cornerstone, Third Street, Rise, Elevate.
I can hit my buzzer. Okay,
I'm ready to go for it, Tony.
Rise is the bar. Third Street is the bank. Cornerstone is the church. Elevate is the dispensary.
Okay, and here are mine. Cornerstone is the bar, because I think you're just trying to throw us off. Third Street is the bank. I share that with Tony. Rise is the dispensary, and Elevate is the church.
All right. We got Tony with the goose egg.
Oh, my God.
And then Dan for two.
I got
Dan,
two? Wow.
Dan got Rise is the dispensary, and Elevate is the church. But Cornerstone is the bank, and Third Street is the bar.
Son of a gun.
Honestly, I love a bar called Third Street. Just name the bar after the street it's on.
It felt a little cheap because that could just be anything. But
I mean, any of them could be anything.
Yeah, that's what makes it funny. Yeah,
that was a great round because
that
could have been anything. That could have been anything.
Nice work,
okay,
Josh.
Hey, before I want to do a tease for our next GGCH, if I could. You two guys know this, but I have spent the last week preparing to fly to Los Angeles, where Wednesday I will be going on this huge mommy blog podcast with 750,000 YouTube subscribers to debate a Christian vegan, the guy who made the film Christspiracy. So this is like, I've been deep, you guys, deep in the weeds, translating the Septuagint out of Greek. I mean, stuff I haven't done in a long time. So
the Septuagint is the Greek translation of the Torah, correct?
Of the whole Old Testament.
Of the whole Old Testament. Okay.
Yep.
Got it.
Yep.
So that's like a translation that like some of the New Testament authors were using.
All of them used. That's
Greek.
What they
All
used.
All of them used it. Okay.
That's what they used when they were putting words in Jesus' mouth.
Which presents an interesting issue because the Septuagint is now understood to have been kind of a bad translation of the Hebrew in many parts. And it's the main version of the Old Testament that the New Testament writers were working with. And then also when they're using this and sort of having Jesus quote the Bible from the Septuagint, Jesus didn't speak Greek. He spoke Aramaic.
Oh, that's not necessarily true.
Oh, okay.
You're right. His daily spoke Aramaic.
Yeah.
Probably he knew enough Greek to converse in Greek.
So he might have actually quoted the Septuagint if that's what kind of people were doing then.
He was probably just quoted in Aramaic, and probably he knew some Hebrew. But he wasn't. I mean, everybody just assumes he was quoting the Bible in Hebrew. He wasn't. And surely the New Testament authors were not translating from Hebrew into Greek. They were just using the Septuagint, which right. was like highly regarded in that world of the day. Yeah. So anyway, we can talk. I mean, there's a lot more but that I've been prepping for, but it's going to be a wild experience, and I'm sure it would be good GGCH material next month.
Can't wait. Can't wait for it.
Tony,
let me just say, when you told me that that guy had made a film called Christspiracy about veganism, mm-hmm. My response was, of all the things that a documentary called Christspiracy could plausibly be about, veganism is number 100.
I know.
I mean, you've got kind of like crazy right-wing versions of that. You know, I could think of 20 of those. I could think of like, I don't know, stuff that's about, I don't know, like the biblical text or Da Vinci Code type Dan Brown.
This is
power
very
cover up stuff.
Dan, this is very Da Vinci Code like because he's saying like, oh, it's been covered up by the church, and I found a Gnostic gospel that is referred to once by a guy who wrote in 375 who says that Jesus was a vegan. Like, and the church has been in cahoots with big meat and industrial farming for 2,000 years, and has like silenced the Cathars.
The conspiracy, unfortunately, predates factory farming.
I mean,
and you know, we can get into the merits of the argument perhaps after you have been on the podcast. But if what you're telling me is that the central preoccupation of the early organized church, which let's just say it was interested in sort of its own power and was willing to involve conspiratorial actions to maintain its power, I'm going to go on a limb and say the pernicious danger of vegans was not high on the list of things that the church self-protection mode needed to protect itself against. Seems pretty low. But hey, you know what? Maybe I will watch the film. I will not watch the film. But I will listen to you tell me how it went.
Okay.
In your conversation. All right. So then that brings us to briefly how we are becoming like our dads. This is a fun recurring segment. I will start. The day before Easter, Easter Saturday, whatever, it's a beautiful day. I had gone to bed early. I had gotten like 9 hours of sleep, which is essentially unheard of in this season of my life with a 4-year-old and a 4-month-old. And I maybe even had a little extra coffee. And guys, what the sleep and the coffee did, I turned directly into my fucking dad. I became a chatty Cathy to the max. Talking to strangers at the Easter egg hunt? Yes. Talking to two different strangers at the grocery store? Yes. Hey, you're wearing a Padres hat? Get ready for me to ask you if you're from San Diego, because I'm only from 9 hours north of San Diego. Maybe we would have something to talk about. Oh, you're wearing a Blink-182 shirt? Expect to hear me say that I liked them better with Matt Skiba. What the fuck is happening to me, you guys?
Was there cannabis involved too?
No substances other than a
caffeine,
whatever,
and sleep.
20% higher than normal caffeine dose and like a 40% higher than normal sleep amount, you know, 30-40%.
And your dad's a chatty guy, huh?
He is. Like, he would always engage in a little bit of friendly chatter with strangers. Anytime we were in public, he is that guy. Maybe, like, he hasn't flown a lot. My mom doesn't fly, so we never, like, flew as a family. So I don't know if I've ever flown with my dad, because we didn't take flying vacations or anything. But I would imagine he wouldn't, like, necessarily talk to the neighbor for the entire flight, but he would be perfectly open to it, put it that way.
I don't like those people.
I don't like those people. This is the problem.
I wonder if there's something about like hitting a certain age where your inhibitions are like, what's there to lose? That factor
like that.
Is just so much lower.
It's
funny,
Dan. Angle.
The year's segue is perfectly into mine. I was going to say last Tuesday, actually at Tony's book release, I felt very much like my dad because Emily and I, it was her birthday, so we're just hanging out, kind of doing our own thing on that day. and there's people like three seats down from me that are there to see Tony for the book release.
Yeah.
And I like couldn't help but ask how they knew Tony. I was like, I just gotta know.
That's my kid out
these
there.
People know.
That's basically what that is.
Right. Yeah. It was like, I don't know why, but I have this like impulse to ask this guy, how do you know Tony? And I'm not super outgoing, but my dad will basically confess that he can't help himself, but like be curious about strangers. So very similar to yours.
Well, your dad's a pastor, right? I think that is like kind of part of the skill set.
Definitely.
You know, and being able to like, and I say that not with any derision or sarcasm. I think there's a genuine power and capacity in being able to like create quick connection between individuals.
Yeah.
That can be used poorly, but it can be used really well also.
Totally.
It's like your daughter makes a layup, you know, in the basketball game and you're like, that's my girl. You know, it's like, that's such a parent thing to do.
Yeah, it was funny.
Tony?
I spent last weekend in Fort Worth, Texas, visiting my son who goes to TCU. It was dad's weekend at his fraternity. And,
Okay.
Southern, like, my other two kids went to college in New England. That's where I went. This is a very different vibe, like a Southern University fraternity type deal. Very, very different than what I'm used to, okay, for one thing. But how I became like my dad on this deal is that my dad, some people maybe have read my book, I had kind of, especially at the end of his life, I had a strained relationship with my dad. And I think people who read my book probably can sense that in my first marriage, I had some problems with codependency and trying to like please an unpleasable person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
My dad did not give a shit what anyone thought of him. He was like the least codependent person I know to a fault, to the point that he was like, had almost no empathy for other people. Mm-hmm. But all that to say, there was a lot of pressure on both Friday and Saturday nights to stay up super late and drink. And I drank, you know, like I had some beers and whatever when we were out. But the other dad stayed up till 3 or 4 in the morning with these kids, like trying to go beer for beer with these 19 and 20-year-old kids. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I don't care. Like, I don't care if they think I'm lame. I'm not trying. Yeah. Like, I have nothing to prove to these dads I'll never see again. And they're 19-year-old sons. And they're like, come on, Mr. Jones, let's go.
No, reliving their own fraternity days, no doubt.
Oh, my God. Right? Yeah, of course. And trying to, they want their kids to think they're cool or whatever. And they're good. I met with some good dads. But by the way, also, I seem to be a magnet for the super conservative evangelical dads. Which was not fun. And let me just say this. This isn't about being like my dad, but like if I met a doctor, I wouldn't suddenly start being like, let me tell you what I know about medicine. And yet when people meet me and it comes out, oh yeah, I've written these books and what do you do? You know, oh, I'm a theologian. I teach at a seminary and I have a PhD in theology. Oh my God, let me tell you about what I just learned about the book of Revelation from my pastor. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what? I'll tell you why I believe it, Tony. And, I'm going to say this with there's no derision in my heart, no mocking in my genuine spirit. But when I was a touring musician and then a commercial composer even, so basically most of 20 years of my life, that was my full-time job. And, Tony, you would not believe how many people's brother or cousins are in bands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm sure that's the same.
And it's
deal.
Just people are just trying to connect, but it's like,
tell me about it. Yeah,
there are a million bands in America, or half of them. I mean, it's, you know, so it was like, it's like that. I imagine it's kind of, it's just like people, especially when they don't know someone, are looking for, like Josh's dad is good at this. They're looking for something that we go, okay, this person's cool. I'm safe here. There's another human being here that is like relatively trustworthy. And they look for things to connect on to build that fellow feeling, you know?
I mean, I will just say that one of the dads said in the course of what he's, because they finally start pressing me and I say, look, I mean, we don't need to get into this, but I just come from a very way more progressive version of Christianity than you do. And like what? And I'm like, oh, like I've, you know, been like gay affirming in the church for a long time and have written extensively about it. And then I get the old, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a theologian, but I know in Genesis, it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. You know, like, they're still...
Yeah.
I'm like, are you... Oh, my God.
You should tell them. You should... In fact, you could tell them, if you were to put my name into ChatGPT like Dan did last year, it would show up that I am a well-known advocate for queer inclusion in the church.
Right, right. And I'm like, I just want to watch some college rugby.
That's actually a good segue into maybe talking about this Richard Hayes book, which also I wanted to talk about the comment section on my Instagram. So you guys have noticed this, and I'm not sure how many listeners have noticed, but I have begun like taking my Instagram presence seriously, I would say, and trying to like utilize that as a place that people might find out about the podcast who would like it. Right. So I'm taking, you know, sometimes it's like a clip from the episode, but I've been doing more of these like direct to camera sort of short videos that are trying to like make some point that's related to an episode or related to sort of the general, you know, my general focus areas. Anyway, like some of these have gone beyond like my followers. Right. So most recently, like I actually just posted one this morning as we are recording, but as of April 8th, certainly the highest performing video I've had thus far is this announcement of the Richard B. Hayes book, which we're going to talk about in a second. And it's about a gay affirming approach, a biblical approach from a guy who's really well known for having been sort of one of the only non-affirming scholars that was also in general taken seriously beyond like evangelical or Catholic circles or something like that. So I did mention like that millstone comment, I think last month, that was like the worst one that I had gotten from a review. But now, like, just doing the podcast for the last 5 years or so has actually shielded me from so much of this online discourse, if you want to call it that, because people are not going to go and listen to a 90-minute podcast episode by someone they disagree with. Like, it's too high of an ask, but they will comment on a 70-second video, especially one that gives a headline right at the beginning, so they don't even have to watch the video if they already know what they think. And this particular video Instagram tells me that it has reached about three times as many non-followers as it has reached followers. So this is like a big new group of people. And it's worth it because some of those people might be like, oh, what's this? Like, I might dig this guy's stuff and then they might follow or find the podcast, which is the whole point. But plenty of people are not. And I need to take my own medicine here and like recognize that there is like a selection bias. There is the type of person. You know, let's say I have 100 comments of this type and like 12,000 people have watched it. That means we're dealing with, you know, the 8% of people or whatever who would think that it would be a good use of their time to comment on this video that they disagree with. Okay. But a few examples from this one, which is, you know, about queer inclusion. Wow, adding plagues, nice, which I think means when God judges America, I am adding on to the plagues that God will send. I think that's what that comment meant. That's a kind of a new one for me logically. Quote, even the wise and elect will be deceived, unquote. Interesting. I at least like that she considers that I might be elect. That's a nice, you know.
Or wise.
And then my favorite, I mentioned in the video a bunch of these sort of more moderate, but like very compassionate and like you almost kind of wonder if they want to be affirming, but they can't quite get there. Of course, we don't know for sure. People like Greg Boyd, Preston Sprinkle, Andy Stanley, John Mark Comer. Those are the four I mentioned in the video. And these are guys, like pretty orthodox guys. And the one comment, the pastors you mentioned are not actually Christians.
Oh my gosh.
And it's just wild, guys. Like, it is, it's wild. I have not had to deal with this stuff. Tony, you have. You probably, this is an old hat for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's new for
me.
Yeah,
I mean, I get trolled all the time to this day. You know, I don't know. I post something and somebody's like, well, you just continue leading people to hell. I mean, the episode that Josh and I released this morning of the Emerged podcast is all like audio and video clips of people saying stuff about us, myself included.
The backlash.
The backlash, and then we respond to it because it's, you know, and we had John MacArthur and John Piper and D.A. Carson and, you know, Christian radio shows. And, I mean, all Instagram and Facebook and those things, Twitter has, it used to be more on Twitter, I think. I used to get it on Twitter all the time. And now it's crazy. Like, nobody even sees my tweets. I have, like, whatever, 17,000 followers. Nobody sees my tweets. So good for you for doing it on Instagram because Twitter's dead. And And now the bar is so low for people to comment. Like back when I was blogging, at least you had to like have a discuss. Remember DISQUS or whatever it was? You had to like have a discuss account and you'd have a little avatar and you could comment on my blog or whatever. And now it's just like everybody's got an Instagram account. You don't. There's the bar is so low for somebody to just fire off a comment.
Yeah,
so
I just blocked the guy because he put out like 8 comments in 3 minutes, all of which were whatever. I was like, I'm just gonna block this guy. Yeah. Yes. And it was like the official Instagram handle for like a local business that had nothing to do with Christianity. But the guy's like, well, I'm at work. I guess I'm gonna go. Dude, it's like, what the hell? Like, it's crazy. A truly low bar.
Nadia, the episode real quick, she says two things. One is Nadia Boltz-Weber talks about how the internet is like the real life with all the forgiveness sucked out of it, vacuumed out of it, which is interesting.
Great line.
Yeah, that's a quote of someone else I can't remember.
Dave Zoll. That's a quote from David Zoll, who runs Mockingbird.
And then the other thing she said is she thinks it's just as dangerous to get as much positive feedback online anonymously than it is to get negative feedback, which is interesting.
I think I would say it's more dangerous because the negative feedback is like it, you know, the occasional comment might sting a little bit if some of the language gets to some insecurity or whatever, but it is like, for the most part, patently absurd and quite easy.
But Dan, here's another thing she said that you might have a little experience with. I have a lot of experience with.
Mm-hmm.
She does too. She said the criticism from the right, she's like, whatever, the joke writes itself from the right. When it comes from the left, that's when it hurts. Your own tribe.
That's true. I actually, this might be interesting to talk about here. I put up a post about being a moderate. And I did that on purpose. I'm still kind of figuring out like how this stuff will work best in that forum. You know, like I have the values of my show and public work pretty well ironed out. Like I know what I'm trying to do. I've put in a bunch of work with the help of some people who have helped me with marketing, which includes Kristen and Sari and also my friend Mikey, about like, what am I doing? What's valuable about it? Who am I? Who is this for? You know, what are the values? So, one of the things I've been interested in is like, is there a way to take all the tribal dopamine, you know, all that kind of structural stuff around that the far left and the far right are able to sort of, they kind of hijack our brains by utilizing that stuff toward more extreme views. And I'm like, can we use some of that toward more moderate views and like a more moderate identity? It's a question I find truly interesting. And it is something that I hope some other people will pursue. But I think after doing one video I'm not gonna pursue that route. It was like, a lot of the comments, certainly the more disturbing comments were from my own side of things. And it was like, oh, so you only a little bit approve of genocide, or, you know, like things yeah. of that nature. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it's tough because if, as a moderate, like I recognize that, like, if I am going to err, I'm probably going to err on the side of, like, not being enraged enough and, like, you know, focusing too much on persuading the persuadable members of the other side. Like, that's kind of what I'm focused on. And if I am guilty of that in any given instance of, like, basically not advocating for the people that I am advocating for, or, like, you know, that is way more painful than someone saying, oh, you're just dragging more heretics to hell. You know, the Bible is clear. And I'm just like,
my experience, we don't need to talk much about my experience in this because, yes, I've had a lot of that. On the other hand, I started my Substack, I don't know, a year ago, and they've all been very, very, like, personal essays about
Tony's
me
Field
and my
Notes.
Own,
great title.
Yeah, my own life and whatever. But then my buddy Ryan Parker was like, oh, you got to see the trailer for this film. These guys say that Jesus was a vegan. And he's like, he works in Hollywood in marketing to faith-based communities and stuff. So he sends me the trailer. I'm like, this is crazy. And I was like, it was one of those things. It was a Thursday morning. I'm like, I got to crank out a Substack. It's time. And so I'm like, well, I'm good at this. I used to do it on my blog all the time, like a hot take on something. So I just wrote, Jesus was not a vegan, and not in all caps, you know, and just wrote a thing about kind of how ridiculous this is, and then posted it and tagged the film, right? And now, 2 weeks later, they're flying me to LA to debate these guys. So, like, the other thing is, as much as doing clickbaity type stuff probably 90% of the times brings out the wrong people who aren't going to subscribe to YHB,
right?
Once in a while, it's going to open a door and someone's going to be like, okay, you're into the same thing I'm into. Like, let's talk about it. And I have a massive platform or whatever, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think it's weighing possible benefits and costs, right? And
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I did stop Depolarize, one of my first podcasts, because I found that, like, my nervous system is not good at handling, like, being right in the culture war and also having to follow politics, which is kind of puts you there. It's just like, I'm just, like, not well suited for it. And I think that making, like, a badge out of being a moderate, which is something I really do, I hope someone does it, and I will follow them, and I will watch with great interest. But I think it's too close to that. And, you know, that's fine. Like, you try something, you learn a lesson. It's not, like, fundamental to my strategy that I have to, like, make that really front and center. I would say it's pretty fundamental to my own values that I model what it's like to, like, listen and think carefully and not dismiss things out of hand before I have considered them. That's got some overlap with what we might call a moderate position. It's not exactly the same thing. And I think that's also part of it. That's not exactly the same thing as being a moderate. I kind of learned a little bit there. But let's talk about this Richard Hayes book, because we've been texting about it. There's been a lot written. I think I'm going to be talking about it probably with Tim Whitaker on the New Evangelicals coming up here soon, and maybe some other stuff, because I think it's really interesting. And just a little bit of background, like, when I recorded the all-time most successful You Have Permission episode, is about being gay affirming, which I assumed would probably be the all-time number one episode because it's something that so many people are interested in. Anyway, I had J.R. Daniel Kirk on, and he studied with Richard Hayes at Duke when Daniel did his PhD. And we structured our conversation kind of in response to Hayes's arguments in that book, as well as Hayes's overall structure of that book, his, like, cruciform hermeneutical strategy or whatever. And Daniel actually argued within that episode that if Hayes were to take his own hermeneutical strategy more seriously, then he ought to come out on the affirming end. So I am really curious to see the argument that Hayes and his son Christopher Hayes make, does he kind of go that route, like Daniel was saying, and say, actually, this is what my original structure should have led me to? Is it some different argument? But the fact that it was so central, that like his work specifically was so central to that episode, and it was a, his book, The Moral Vision of the New Testament, was like a major stop on my own path of like determining kind of once and for all where I stood on queer issues about a decade ago. So this I thought was kind of big, the announcing this book. He's a respected scholar by plenty of conservatives, certainly among like center right sort of theoretically persuadable types. Hayes is big in the more academic circles. He's not like a, he's not a John MacArthur, like a popular writer, but a lot of the pastors of these like middle ground evangelical non-denominational churches know his work and probably have used it in their own discernment, whether or not to use that in air quotes depends on the person, around queer sexuality. So that's kind of the basic backdrop and why I'm interested in it. Okay, probably a good time to go to the Patreon-only section of our conversation. So again, you can head to patreon.com/DanCoke and sign up there if you're not already signed up, and you'll get the whole episode. You can use a URL that it'll give you there to put it into your podcast app. Sometimes you can just kind of click straight through into your app of choice and subscribe to that Patreon feed. Appreciate it.